On today's episode of Good Word, J.A. Adande joins me to discuss the Timberwolves taking a 3-1 lead over the Lakers, Ant-Man going crazy, J.J. Redick forgetting he has a bench, and the Knicks taking advantage of a no-call in Detroit, Steph Curry going crazy against Houston, and a crazy finish in Inglewood. All that and talking about Damian Lillard tearing his Achilles. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business to get into before we begin today's show. Of course, we are on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe to us there. Rate, review, give us reviews. Also, wherever you consume this audio podcast. Of course, today I had to bring in my man, J.A. Adande. Y'all all know who he is. J.A., man, what a freaking weekend we had in the NBA playoffs. I don't even know where to begin. Where do you want to begin, man? Do you remember a weekend like this in the first round? Just so much, just dripping with drama. You know what I mean?
Yeah, drama. And then even the series that are on their ways to being sweeps have had their moments. You know, I would say Cleveland-Miami is the least dramatic, least amount of storylines coming out of that. But, you know, you had that historic comeback and a Ja Morant injury of note in the other potential sweep, right? The series that are 2-2, like, there's so much going on beyond just the fact that it's tied 2-2. One of the 2-2s should be a sweep or could very easily have been a sweep, and that's the Clippers and the Nuggets.
Yep. I mean,
when the Clippers lost game one, a game they really controlled for most of that game, I'm thinking, okay, well, now they're going to have to beat Denver 5 times in this series, basically, because that was a win.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to win another game now. And in this game, Denver really outplayed. This wasn't their game. Game four wasn't their game. They're down by 20, but they're still in position to win at home. And it gets away by a microsecond.
Clipper go clip. That's what we're going to get to that later. We're going to get to that later. Because first, we got to start off with J.A., the 2-3-1 series that very well could be 2-2. I'm sure everybody's expecting my dissertation of the Knicks-Pistons series, game four. I wasn't there for it. I was in Minnesota. We're going to get to the Pistons later. But we're going to talk about Minnesota coming back from multiple double-digit deficits in the second half against the Lakers. Ant walked that team down, J.A. Adande. We're going to talk about J.J. Redick and not subbing his guys out for the second half. We're going to get to that. But I want to start, J.A. Anthony Edwards has put out Kevin Durant, Nikola Jokic, and now is possibly going to put out LeBron James and Luka Doncic and could face Stephen Curry in the next round. Like, this is potentially, like, really what we're talking about, taking the torch from some of these guys. He gonna have all their skins on the wall, all of them.
He would have some pelts, you know, as I call him. He'd have those pelts. It's funny. I was out at the Clippers Nuggets game three, and James Harden at the podium talked about. He's like, man, this is my 16th playoff, you know, and I've been around, and it really hit me. And I went up to him after. I was like, man, so I felt that 16 playoffs, like, because I was there his first playoff series with the Thunder, him, Russ, KD in 2009, they played the Lakers, and I would say, I think you talked about this recently too, you and Bomani, you only get one of those series where you can lose and everybody's happy, right? Mm-hmm. They're just happy to be there, and I was at this series, they lost to the Lakers in 5, it was like a last second putback by Pau Gasol to finish them off, not quite as dramatic as the Aaron Gordon putback, but guess what? They got a standing ovation from their fans walking off as they lost in the first round. You only get one of those. And then 2 years later, they were in the conference finals and Dirk put him out. And Harden was just, you know, 14 years later, he's still in admiration of that run that Dirk got on. You know, took out all the Hall of Famers. So the 3 future Hall of Famers on that Thunder team, Kobe and Powell. And then, of course, you get to the finals and it took out LeBron and Dwayne Wade. And so we could look back at Anthony Edwards as having that type of run. Right? Like that Dirk 2011 run where you're just taking out Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer. I asked Dirk one time, I said, do you have all those jerseys up on your wall from all the dudes you took out in 2011? He smiled. He said, no. I said, I would. If I had a run like that, I'm putting all their jerseys. I'm putting a Kobe jersey, Gasol, LeBron, Wade, all their jerseys you'd see hanging behind me on a Zoom call.
Yeah, it's J.A., this is, I feel like this is what we ask of young superstars when we ask them to take it from the standard bearers. Like, he was very complimentary of Luka Doncic. He said, you know, he's probably the best young player today. He said LeBron is the best player leaving the game today. And I thought that was really funny when he said
leaving the game.
He wasn't saying like leaving the game, like retiring, but he like clearly saying, you know, this guy's close to the end of the beginning.
It's weird.
Right.
But with verbalize
that,
it.
But with that, it was like, yeah, he leaving the game because I'm going to put his old ass out.
Right.
Like, when I watched the fourth quarter of the game, J.A., LeBron and Luka were tired. Understandably so, because they did not miss a minute during the second half. You know who else didn't miss a minute during the second half? Anthony Edwards. He didn't rest either. And when
nobody's talked about that. This is the first I've heard that mentioned, that he did not come out in the second half.
He didn't. And they were down 10 to start the fourth quarter. And, you know, those critical minutes to start quarters where, you know, a 10-point lead can go down to 4, or it can go up to 16. And the total tenor of the game, like follow me on this one, Jay. We tend to think of clutch as last second or 5 minutes or less and all that other type of stuff. But if you're making shots to keep your team in it just to keep your spirit right, to me, that's a different level of clutch that we don't talk about. And that's what Anthony Edwards did. And he had just enough energy to put out two Hall of Famers who were having games. Like, Luka had a game, LeBron had a game, Ant just had the game. Like,
but also, Vinny, during crunch time, he wasn't trying to do high energy plays. He wasn't soaring and trying to dunk on people like earlier in the game. What he did, what enabled him to be successful, was read the Laker defense, see the double, and move the ball to the open man. I'm not sure he scored in the last minute or 2 minutes, right? But he was certainly
he had the free throws with 9 seconds left.
Okay,
after
so no
the
field goal
from LeBron.
You know, because he was moving the ball and having defeating the Lakers strategy, right? If they're going to get the ball out of his hands, he was recognizing that, seeing the double. And that's really the advanced level of stardom, right? Can you see the double coming? Can you escape it? Can you move the ball or make your move before the double gets there? That's where, you know, latter career Michael Jordan was so devastating. And he was there. And the disappointing thing for the Lakers is it's not just the fatigue that got them. LeBron James, standing still on an inbounds play, makes a bad pass for a turnover, much like he did against the Bulls in that collapse that they had in the Bulls late in the season. I mean, I haven't gone back and looked at machinations, but maybe if they win that game, they get the 2 seed and they're not dealing with Ant-Man right now. I don't know. I don't know if you play it out differently and they win that game. But two inexplicable errors from one of the smartest players to ever play the game. And he costs his team a regular season game, and then much more crucially, this game, because he makes a bad, ill-advised inbounds pass.
J.A.
And also, I would say taking an ill-advised three. If you've been on the court the entire second half at 8:40, you're down by 2, and he took that three when they didn't need it.
Well, to me, that's where the fatigue comes in. That's where, when you make a decision to say, you know what, man, I don't got the legs to drive this down the lane, to collapse the defense and everything else. Like, let's talk about the minutes thing now. Because for subtext of this, y'all, game 3 was Friday night. Game 4 was Sunday afternoon. So Luka Doncic was sick. LeBron said, I'm going for it. This is the game that we got to go for it. Because Luka is sick, I'm going to have to empty out the tank. And he had a great game. And they made critical mistakes down the stretch to lose game 3, in addition to Luka not feeling well. In game 4, they went for it even more with no substitutions. I've never seen this in the history of my life, J.A., where they didn't even start Jackson Hayes. They said, Dorian Finney-Smith, you're starting the second half, and nobody's coming out. The fact that J.J. Redick saw this game, I don't think this is what people are getting to me, J.A., he saw this game as being so critical. He looked at this and said, 2-2 is the only acceptable way for us to win this series. A 3-1 deficit is not something we can come back from. When all truthfully you have to do in a 3-1 deficit, Jay, is win one road game. At some point, you're going to have to win a game on a road in a series. he decided that game four had to be the game, and he made a calculated risk, and that risk backfired on them. And because LeBron didn't have a field goal in the fourth quarter, Luka not only was tired on offense, but he was food on defense. Jay, it was blow by city on Luka. It was blow by city on LeBron. It was blow by city on Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura. They got where they wanted to go. And I'm just wondering if that was a rookie mistake on J.J. Redick, who I think has had an exceptionally good season as Laker head coach in year one.
Yeah, and the irony is that he followed the pattern of someone who is even less experienced than him, David Adelman, because Adelman played Christian Brown and Nikola Jokic the entire second half in their game, their game four. Obviously, it paid off for them. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Jokic doesn't miss so widely that Aaron Gordon has that putback if he's a little more rested. It's funny. I've been paying attention to minutes more than ever this postseason. So going back to game one of the Pacers and the Bucks, and, you know, the Pacers controlled that game all the way, and then the Bucks mounted a furious comeback, and Giannis was just out there exerting so much energy. And I'm thinking, I wonder if they would have been better off them losing and just getting blown all the way out, and Giannis can rest up and live to see another day.
Yeah.
You know, and I think back to Greg Popovich wasn't trying to have the heroic historic comeback. Like, you get down double digits early in the fourth quarter, Tim, Tony, Manu, have a seat. We're going to put the young guys in. I was talking to somebody that actually played in one of those games, a coach in one of those games where he did that. And the thing is, when you put the back of the bench in, they're going to come in and play with energy.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the starters on the other team with the lead, they're in cruise control mode. They're not ready for that energy. So there's one time when the backups almost brought the game in, and you had to serve the dual purpose of expending energy from the other team starters and key players, and your guys rested up for the next game. And no one does that anymore. You never see anyone. And that was like a Popovich exclusive. Like, we get down, I don't care if it's a playoff game, there are more playoff games to come, we rested. And I was thinking about that in game three, the Clippers and the Nuggets. I was out at Intuit Dome, and, you know, it's a 20-point game in the fourth quarter, about halfway through the fourth quarter, and both teams still had their starters in. And this was with a similar turnaround with the Lakers, with an afternoon game coming up in game four, so you don't even have a full 48 hours to recover.
Right.
And I was thinking, I might just wave the white flag here. And eventually, Adelman did a couple minutes later, but I would have been quick with that hook. And that's something to think about.
No, and clearly it's nothing JJ thought about.
No. And one other thought about minutes. This is a long-term thing. But for all the criticism that Steve Kerr has gotten for fastidiously managing Steph Curry's minutes over the years.
Yeah,
but I was thinking about it. So Steph plays about, let's say, plays 70 games a year. Mm-hmm. Just a difference of 2 minutes a game. You know, maybe 33 minutes instead of 35. And that's 140 minutes a year. And I think that breaks down to 3.5-4 games worth per year.
Yeah.
You know, you add that up over his career. So now you look at age 37 Steph Curry doing what he's doing. And I wonder how much of that you can attribute to Steve Kerr fastidiously managing his minutes over the course of all these regular seasons, even if it costs him a game or two here or there.
You know, it's funny. I go back to thinking like the old NBA and NBC days, where towards the end of the Bulls run, they would have a graphic up, especially the last year. I feel like I only saw it the last year because they probably monitored Michael's minutes because of everything that happened with Scottie Pippen. And it would say game time rest and then say actual time rest. Like, you would schedule your timeouts around the end of quarters, so you would get the double type of rest. You would get the TV timeouts, the regular timeouts, the end of quarter, the commercials, all that. So even if you sat for just 3 or 4 minutes of game time, you might have sat for 10 minutes of real time. Your legs don't know the difference. Your body doesn't know the difference that it's a commercial or if it's just the end of a quarter. Your body is getting rest. And I'm shocked that especially at the start of the fourth quarter, J.A., the Lakers got a 10-point lead. You could find a minute or two for your 40-year-old LeBron James, for your poorly conditioned Luka Doncic. Give them a minute. Just give them a mental blow. Like, I don't think we realize just the thought of the mental break of just being able to sit down and gather yourself. And I'm wondering if that's a rookie mistake on J.J. Redick's part, or just some type of tacit admission, this roster is severely flawed. We don't have anything like what we need for this team to be a contender right now, or J.A., or how about this one? The Minnesota Timberwolves may be the better team. They walk, if you think about Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, who, God forbid, he has actually not just shown up, J.A., he has not been a reckless basketball player. He has dipped that shoulder into LeBron James' old-ass 40-year-old chest and worn him down. Like, it's those type of things that I don't think that we've taken into account. Minnesota is wearing them down, and I think J.J. is feeling that.
You know, so I think he definitely did, and he's talked about it. He did take the playoff duration into account. These TV timeouts, all the games are on national TV, so the TV timeouts are all long.
A little bit longer.
So you do
right.
get that extra time. The halftime is going to be a little bit longer. So there is more rest baked into that. And I know he took that into consideration. And, you know, and he talked about, well, I saved a couple of timeouts and I was going to ask the guys. You can't ask the guys during a playoff game, you know, if they need
they're
a break.
They're not going to sub right. themselves out.
You're not going to get honesty there, right? So that's where you as the coach need to say, okay. And again, all the times that Steve Kerr, and Steve Kerr did it, I'm trying to think if it was two or three of the Rockets-Warriors series, but he started Curry at the fourth, which is out of his pattern, and I thought that's unusual. Is he going to go the full fourth? No, you know, about three, Pulled 4 minutes out. In, he took him out for a couple minutes, and then we saw Steph had enough to finish strong. Because we've seen Steph, you know, doesn't always come through down the end. You know, we've seen sometimes he might, you know, come up a little short on his shot or make mm-hmm. a careless turnover and show some mental fatigue. But Kerr has managed him well enough to the point where he's finished all these games really strongly.
Speaking of, I know Laker fans will probably want to hear, is really hand really a part of the ball? Yeah, but the wrist ain't. The wrist is not part of the ball, y'all. Sorry. Not going to give you bail on that one. LeBron could have defended Ant Edwards like solidly. Like Ant wasn't in an advantageous position there on that drive. Like he had just caught a pass on a cut from Dante DiVincenzo and the shot clock was running down. LeBron didn't have to reach over and foul. LeBron bailed out Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves on that one. Just like the New York Knicks did. Were bailed out by the officials to finish their game four against the Detroit Pistons. Yes, this is time to talk Detroit. All right, J.A., I'm not going to be one to say the Pistons got totally, totally hosed. They got hosed, but they hosed themselves, right? They had chances to win the game and chances to put it away. They're a young team. They didn't fully put their foot on the necks. Kay Cunningham hit that shot, that free throw line shot. Nine times out of ten, I think he makes that. But you learn through these experiences. And secondarily for me, I will give credit. You have to give credit to Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, Karl Towns. Incredible shot making in
was
the
that
fourth
last
quarter.
Name again?
Karl Towns.
Say it with your chest. Karl Anthony Towns.
There we go.
Was making. Big I just want to hear you say it. You say it because, man, was he making some big shots. Deep shots. Fall away over the backboard shots. You know, ridiculous shots. Oh, man, did he come through.
You got to give him credit. You have to give him big time credit for that. Jalen Brunson, who seems to do this every game. He gets hurt. He goes into the locker room. Who knows what happens when he goes to the locker room? We have no idea what happens in there. Comes back out, looks no worse for wear. I think, let's talk about the officiating, or at least the officiating on the last play, because I do like the officiating as a whole in these playoffs, J.A. I like the fact that the officials are allowing more physical play. You're not going to get bailed out. Even though Jalen Brunson took flopping and that nonsense to a whole new level in New York, by and large, he has calmed a little bit of that down in the time since. I felt like, and I'm sure Dakota will have a photo of some screens, or maybe I'll shoot him some. Tim Hardaway, it was contact made by Josh Hart. Tim Hardaway was definitely fouled. The official who's right there, J.A., should see that. In my opinion, if you are sitting there right on the play, now maybe you can say you're not, maybe you didn't have the vantage point because it wasn't to Tim Hardaway's, you know, left shoulder. Maybe on his left shoulder, you might have been closer to it, but you were right on top of the play. That's a call you got to make. Maybe, J.A., the only grace I can give the officials is they made a decision coming out of that timeout. We're not going to call anything. We're not going to decide this. And we've seen situations like that, but that was an obvious and egregious foul. So obvious that they had to make a statement.
I disagree, actually.
You don't think it was a foul? I'm actually disappointed
that Guthrie said afterward that it should have been a foul. Because I thought if it was contact, it was marginal. But he said it went beyond marginal. I also think that Hardaway initiated the contact. So, man, I was reviewing. There's that last kind of overhead angle. I went through. I was sliding back and forth, reviewing, back to the left, back and to the left. Got to give a shout-out to Kevin Costner and JFK. I got a chance to meet him after the Clipper game the other night. Back and to the left. Back. But, I mean, I was toggling that video. To me, Hardaway leans in. You cannot say Hart jumped into Hardaway.
But he was in a vulnerable position when you jump forward.
And goes across. But Hardaway, his initial move, when you shoot, this is for the people watching the video, does your elbow go up and shoulder go toward the hoop? Or do you shoot like this? Because Tim Hardaway gathered going back to the left like that. And then the follow through, he's clearly hunting for the foul because he turns by the end of his follow through. His shoulders are facing 45 degrees when he started. He's facing the far baseline. That's why he Vanderjacked that shot so much and missed it wide to the right because he wasn't even trying to shoot. He was hunting for the foul. So I have a lot less sympathy. If he had maybe tried to put up the shot and, you know, they'd call the foul, maybe. But he's hunting for the foul in a game in which they have not been prone to calling fouls. You explain to me how someone that takes a normal shot ends up completely perpendicular to the basket.
What I will say is this, and I'm not a devil's advocate because I say the devil doesn't need an advocate, right? Josh Hart, even though his body is leaning maybe straight up, his arms came down. Now, that's where I will say that Josh Hart put himself in a vulnerable position in trying to contest with the hands is that even if the rules
contact
were,
wasn't on the arms, right? The contact was with the body.
Yeah, but the arms were reaching and making contact with the shoulder even straight up. So it was body and shoulder on the call from what I've seen. Now, I'm with you. Had he just gone straight up in a shooting motion to try to make the shot, maybe that's one thing. But if a defender puts himself in a vulnerable position, especially with the New York Knicks who employ, I'm putting you in a vulnerable position, that's where you're looking at it and you say the Knicks don't have a leg to stand on. Even Josh Hart said, yeah, it was a lot of contact there. The bottom line of it is this, J.A., this is where you see, a Knicks team that has elite shot making, right? Because I don't think the Pistons played bad defense. They didn't play great defense. Like, Isaiah Stewart wasn't there. He was really good on Karl Towns. Because he's not there, Jalen Duren is not as strong and is not quick of foot to defend Karl. When they put Tobias Harris on him early in the game, Karl Towns finally realized, oh, I'm 7 feet tall and he's 6'9". Like, I'm going to work him out. The exceptional shot making there juxtaposed with Kay Cunningham and the turnovers. When you're up 11 in your building in the fourth quarter, you can't leave it in the hands of the officials. Like, that's the one thing, the biggest lesson I think that the Pistons will take from this series is that you don't want to leave something in the hands of the officials in the last second. That's why a lot of times you don't see guys going to the basket for last second plays and you see them trying to go to a pet spot on the floor, 1-2 dribble pull up and get a clean look as opposed to, man, I'm going to take it and put the onus on the official. That's usually not going to work out for you. That's my biggest takeaway from Detroit is that from a talent standpoint, they don't have the shot makers outside of Cade that the New York Knicks do. They probably are a little tougher than the Knicks because they have to be. But the Knicks, when they're fully deployed, they have more shot making and they're still going to get swept by Boston.
Well, and Vinny, that's what makes me wonder if, you know, the Pistons can do this. We've seen in their past, particularly, you know, even the 04 team, you know, you had Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton. So it's not like they couldn't generate any offense at all.
And Rasheed was the guy on offense that turned
unstoppable
that
at times. Yeah.
Right.
But that still was a defensive identity team.
Yes.
And this team is a defensive identity team.
Yes.
And I just wonder if your primary identity can be defense in this day and age when you're going to have to keep up with the Celtics and their barrage of three-pointers, right? You're going to have to keep up with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and, you know, he's going to start at 30 points, you know, in his typical game, right? So, like, you got to score in this day and age. And it was funny, like, there was some – you know, somebody, the Pacers game for a little bit. But, you know, some of these games where it's low scoring, you know, and it's funny that the Warriors and the Rockets have been so low scoring. So the Rockets are another team. They don't have the offensive firepower, you know, and the Warriors certainly without Jimmy Butler are not a tremendous offensive team. And, you know, in this day and age, I just don't think you can go far. And I think this Knicks series is a reminder, you know, so here's Detroit down 3-1. I would say they've had the games the way they wanted them, right? The score and the pace has kind of been to their liking. It's been physical. And guess what? You're still down 3-1 because you lost to Karl Anthony Towns and his shot making. And Jalen Brunson and his shot making.
I think it's important to know two things for people who may not know. Jaden Ivey, who would be their secondary shot creator, has been out since January 1st with the fibula injury. Their main defender on the interior, one of the best three-level defenders. I think Isaiah Stewart would have gotten all defensive votes from me had he qualified as far as minutes and games. He didn't, but I think as one of the best rim protectors and not just shot blockers, but rim protectors, that changes the math a little bit. But I tend to agree with you, J.A. You need to have one guy who can take a lot of shots and take the big shots, but you also need a secondary guy that can alleviate the pressure a little bit, that can break down the defense, that can make a defense uncomfortable.
Playmaker, right.
You need a playmaker. And I know a lot of people are screaming, Devin Booker, go get Devin Booker from Phoenix. Cade and Book seem like similar players in a way that neither one of them are blowing by you in a certain way and just going to create mismatches on the floor. You need a more or less a speed guy or a stretch guy, in my opinion, that's going to make things a lot more diverse for this team offensively as they move forward. It's important to note that team won 14 games last year. So that, I will say, Jay, it was really good to see Little Caesars Arena filled up. Those fans were a little bit on the rowdy side come Thursday night. They were screaming a very unsavory phrase to Jalen Brunson, which everybody seemed to hear. But it's good that these basketball towns that the NBA is starting to see sprout up again. It's not just the same old, like Detroit has a huge basketball culture in the city and they play also a huge part.
And now the fact that they're actually in the city as opposed to being way, way out there in Auburn Hills.
I didn't mind Auburn Hills. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't mind Auburn Hills. I didn't mind
Auburn Hills. It was so far, man. Because like you get there, you get to the airport, get your rental car, drive all the way out to that Troy Marriott, and then when it was time to go to the game, you have to drive all the way even further north. So I haven't had a chance to go to Little Caesars Arena. I think now that's the only arena in the league that I haven't been to currently. So maybe if they can stretch it to a game six.
A game six would be fun. A game six in Detroit would be fun.
I might have to hop over there because, you know, I went to Into a Dome and it was popping. So that was the first playoff game ever in that building. You know, I like it. It's just a big, you know, cavernous, deep, goes like straight down. Have you been out there yet?
Yeah, I went there for opening night, which was a little bit different than what
we
saw.
Yeah, this, they said
the
vibe, the atmosphere in there was incredible. It's weird to see the Clippers have a place that just feels Clippers.
So we're going to talk about that on the side of the break because we're going to get to the Clippers. We're going to get to the Clippers and Nuggets. We're going to get to Steph. We're going to get to the unfortunate stuff with Damian Lillard. On the other side of this break, you're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to The Good Word here with my man J.A. Adande. J.A., of course, has mentioned that he was going to the Intuit Dome for the first playoff games there in Inglewood. J.A., that series has lived up to billing so far. Let's start there. Three of the four games, you can say has gone the Clippers' way, and it's 2-2. they should feel very uneasy. Maybe they feel like they're the better team, JA, but they should probably feel like, man, we let two games get away. Are you more encouraged by the Clippers that, hey, let's see, James Harden, he's playing, Kawhi Leonard looks like a cyborg, or are you saying, man, we just gave away home court advantage to Nikola Jokic on one of the most flukish, weirdest plays in the history of sports?
And just by a mental breakdown, right? Like, you had Harden and Powell over there, yep, and nobody yep. boxed out Gordon. And I'll give Gordon credit for not thinking that. Powell and Harden probably like me went, as soon as Jokic did that, reach back.
You look it up, you're like,
from my neck. But I'm like, we've seen this before. I'm like, he's going to make it. There was no doubt in my mind he was going to make it. And I'm sure Powell and Harden were like, oh, well, here comes that L. But Aaron Gordon didn't take anything for granted, went up and got that ball. That's the great irony. If the ball had hit the rim or the backboard or something, you know, the game goes into overtime. But because he missed it so badly, there was Aaron Gordon for the clean putback. And again, replay showed that he got it off in time. If I'm the Clippers, though, again, I have to feel like you're basically put yourself in a position where you're going to have to win six games in this series because you played well enough to win all four games and you're tied 2-2 and asking to beat Jokic 6 out of 7. That's the task now. And you got to win again in Denver. Again, it shouldn't be too daunting. The other problem now is now you go every other day.
Yeah.
So whereas before you can maybe get up a day early and then you're in Denver for, you know, 3 or 4 days total and you get to acclimate to the altitude. I mean, that altitude thing is real.
It's funny.
I remember my first time in Salt Lake City, which isn't as high as Denver, but it's up in the mountains too. And I remember I got on like the elliptical, or it was the 90s, so probably the Stairmaster. And I was just like, wow, man, this is back when I was younger and in pretty good shape. And I was like, man, I'm out of breath. And then I realized, oh yeah, the altitude. You know, it's hard to get your breath. So now you've been in LA for a few days. And you got to go back. I mean, the one good thing is that, you know, maybe the Nuggets acclimated to sea level a little bit too. So maybe it's so not
they gotta
quite
adjust
the
again.
Advantage. Right. But, you know, this again, they're still playing at home and they train there and they live up there. So their lungs should be a little more accustomed to it. It's interesting. I was thinking going into these playoffs. So far in these major championships this year, we've seen Jalen Hurts get a long-awaited championship after disappointment. Paige Beckers, a long-awaited championship. Rory McIlroy, you know, that long-awaited final major. So I was like, okay, who would be the equivalent of a great player who has had to wait a long time to get a championship going in these playoffs? And it's James Harden, unquestionably, is the one that fits that bill, that description.
There's another one, but we're going to talk about him next segment.
We forget how, you know, just like the Clippers were close to sweeping the series. I mean, Harden was pretty damn close to like 3 or 4 straight MVPs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Going back to Steph. Well, Steph's second one, that was Steph all the way. But, I mean, he was unanimous. But
James should have two.
Yeah, he could have beaten Steph in 2015. He could have beaten Russ. The year Russ got it, at least, right? Maybe you can find another one,
too. The year that Russ got it is the year that I voted for James Harden number one. And I had zero problem. I wasn't voting for Russ because we decided the number 10 was some magical number as opposed to the number 9. Like, I just refuse to do it. So, but I tend to agree with your point. And I think Harden has played, like, just looking at his numbers this series, 21, almost 10 assists, 5 boards, shooting 45 from the field and 40 from 3. That's almost vintage James Harden type numbers. Probably not vintage James Harden usage because Kawhi Leonard is there and Kawhi is shooting 56 and 48 from the field. Like, I'm wondering, especially not that I'm trying to be the cops here, nothing like that, because I'm not. But I'm very curious if the league does or doesn't suspend Michael Porter Jr. because he came off the bench during that altercation.
Ooh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and someone asked him about it. That's the only reason I knew. Someone asked him and then someone else provided like this wide view. And he didn't step far onto the floor, but he was underneath the basket. And I wonder how the league will adjudicate that and say, okay, you weren't quite on the floor, but you weren't quite that far away from the bench.
It's defined as the bench area.
the bench right? area.
If I'm curious, you can't leave the bench area. Didn't Amari Stoudemire just come down the sidelines?
He came up the sideline, but that was a lot closer to the altercation, I guess.
Right. But not onto the court.
If
I recall correctly.
Not onto the court.
So it's leaving the bench area. So even if he just wandered under the basket, that's leaving the bench area. Patrick Ewing came on the court when he got suspended that time, but he just walked out to half court. Like, the action was on the far baseline.
Right, and they suspended him.
He just kind of wandered out, and he got suspended, too. He lost that series, too.
And that was 1997. Knicks, P.J. Brown doing a hip toss to Charlie Ward.
The suplex.
Oh, man.
It's so funny. I was sitting there. You know, the game was over.
Yeah.
Right? He had won. You know, it was a wrap. And I'm typing up my story, and just like over the top of my laptop on the far end of the court, I just see Charlie Ward's legs go whoop, flip over. And then it was wild. And then, I mean, there were so many suspensions, they had to stagger the suspensions.
By alphabetical order, if I remember correctly.
So they staggered them between game 6 and 7 because so many guys got suspended and they wouldn't have had the requisite, you know, 8 players to play the game.
Look, I'll tell you this, because we're going to talk about Houston and Golden State now. I'll tell you this. Golden State could have about 8 dudes on the floor and they still might not be able to score if Steph Curry ain't out there. Like, they are legit living off the skin of everything that Stephen Curry is creating at this stage and his age. It was a masterpiece considering, J.A., the first few minutes of the game, I'm like, they can't score. Even Steph was having problems early in the game, and then they started to figure it out. Then Gary Payton II, excuse me, GP2, found some stuff in the pick and roll lately. Like, it just seems like they found ways to win against a team that does not know how to win at all. And getting that game without Jimmy Butler puts a lot of pressure on the Houston Rockets to win game 4. I wouldn't play Jimmy Butler. I'm sure from what I understand, he's going to be a game time decision, but I wouldn't play him. Unless he's fully healthy.
So you took game 3 as the bonus game, and now, you know, now you've got one to play with. I just don't feel like you can play with one. You know, to quote Doc Rivers, don't play with your meat. But I just don't feel like you can afford to play around.
You just said that.
I didn't say it. Doc Rivers said it. Doc Rivers said it. I know the proper terminology is play with your food, but Doc Rivers got up there in a press conference setting and said, don't play with your meat.
What are we doing here?
I'm quoting Doc Rivers, championship coach.
No, I got you. Quote accurately.
I'm quoting accurately.
I'm with you. Quote accurately.
I just would not tempt things. I would not, I would go for the kill. I go for that up 3-1. You know, just like J.J. Redick was desperate to avoid going down 3-1, I'd be desperate to go up 3-1. You know, because I just feel like the margins are thin for the Warriors. So I feel like they already made the calculus that if they sat Jimmy for game 3, you know, that was you had an extra rest day in that one, so you get an extra day of rest. You know, now going forward is every other day. So, you could say, okay, we can set him up and then be ready for 5, 6, 7. But I just feel like, man, if you play Jimmy and get that win at home, you know, and then you put yourself, you don't have to win in Houston.
Right.
And now you give yourself extra cracks at it, right? Now you give yourselves, okay, we can win a 5, we can win back here in 6. And it's not like they haven't won a game 7 in Houston before, so I don't think they'd be completely terrified if they had to go to Houston to win a game 7 against a younger team that hasn't had too many guys in that situation before.
J.A., it's very rare that a series plays out exactly the way that we prognosticated to. It's very rare that we say, you know what? Houston's inexperience is going to really cost them. The fact that they don't have a go-to guy late in games is going to really cost them. Or the fact that their go-to guy is liable to get you 31 game and 5 the next game. And then at the end of that second game, have Draymond Green tell him to go paint his nails. Like, what more emasculating thing could there be besides Draymond Green telling you off the floor, you go paint your nails? I think the most emasculating thing I've heard, I think Isaiah Stewart told Miles Turner after a game last year, you play with Legos.
See,
I don't think there's anything wrong with playing with Legos.
Exactly.
But I think it's hilarious.
I mean, you know, you see behind me, you know, I got more, yeah, I could pan around my apartment. You see Legos taking up every available space. So, like, I wouldn't be that insulted by that. I'm in my 50s. I got more to my share. Well, the thing is, I build, and I think Miles Turner said this too. I build Legos. I don't play with Legos. You know, I'm not sitting here going, you know, and I think that's the same. There's a difference between building Legos and playing with Legos.
Yes.
But he told him, you play with Legos. But I respect Miles Turner. Miles Turner was like, it's true. He wasn't insulted. That shouldn't be taken as an insult. Go paint your nails. Like, if that's what the youngins are doing, the number one draft pick QB for the Chicago Bears paints his nails.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
I'm not sure that's the insult that Draymond thought it was, too. It's serious. I was thinking about Draymond because he also had that tech. And, you know, it was just a completely egregious tech. And Draymond, we've rarely seen a player whose game is so unselfish, right? Because he doesn't care if he gets shots. He doesn't mind being the one to set the screens for Steph or to make the pass that leads to the pass where he might not even get the primary assist on that. He's a completely unselfish, willing to take on guys who are a lot bigger and heavier than him, you know, on defense, all that stuff. But then running halfway down the court to get all up in a referee's face because you're angry about a call and giving Houston a point off a technical in a tight playoff game is a selfish act. That's putting your needs at that moment, your feelings at the moment, above the team. And it's interesting, the dynamic, because clearly Steph has signed off for the full Draymond experience, or Draymond would have been long gone from there.
Yep.
And it's interesting, because I've done a story on Steph and his leadership and the way he sets the culture there. I've done a story on Draymond and, you know, kind of how he's the bad cop, right? But I would love to sit the two of them together and talk about the dynamic of their relationship. Because it's been one of the most successful relationships that we've seen. And
it survived Draymond's a lot. That's like
style,
a marriage.
Yeah, it just
it
seems so
counter
to Steph. Like, you would just think Steph would have zero tolerance for that. But clearly there's this recognition from Steph that I need this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I need this version of him. I'm willing to tolerate and put up with everything because I need him in order to get where I want to go.
You bring up an interesting point, J.A. They could go up 3-1 as we record this. They could very well go up 3-1 and be in the driver's seat, or they could be 2-2 and this could all be obsolete. How do we view them as a championship contender? Do we think, the next round they could play the Minnesota Timberwolves and, you know, even though they wouldn't have home court there, I think Vegas would probably still favor them, even though I wouldn't. And then, in theory, you would go and play the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Finals if you were to get by, you know, making a lot of projection here. Do we look at them as a real championship type of team? Or even, J.A., a team that can go on a championship-like run if Steph has more game threes in his tank?
I don't. Because even in game one with Jimmy Butler, even when they had that big lead, you knew they were going to give the lead. You knew it was going to be a close game before it was over.
Yep.
And sure enough, that's what it turned out to be. You know you can't trust this team to hold leads. You know they have to scrape by. You know they're going to be dependent on Steph. Well, now, in their defense, you can say the same thing about the Olympic team, right?
Like,
the Olympic team, for all of its talent and all of its depth, still had to, you know, have Steph, you know, make some incredible shots. But that was against a great Serbian team, and that was against a great French team. This is coming against the Houston Rockets, who we don't think of as championship material, right? Ime Udoka's done a great job with them. They might even be a little ahead of schedule.
He's on my Coach of the Year ballot.
Yeah, it should be. Absolutely. So no disrespect to the Rockets, but if we don't think they're close to being a championship team and the Warriors are having to kind of squeak by them, I don't think it bodes well for them long term. You know, the team I've been impressed with early, and to me the question is, all right, who can contend with the Thunder? And the Timberwolves in game one, you know, with their perimeter length and athleticism, it just feels like they could present the sternest test. And I see the Celtics. The Celtics, I'm just strictly on the basis of they've been there before.
Yep.
And the Thunder haven't. But I just feels like the Thunder are the superior team. The only thing that can get them is if you catch. The interesting thing is that if the Timberwolves get them in the conference finals, they've been there before, and the Thunder haven't. And I always think that when you get deeper into the playoffs, the experience of having been to that round before, having been to that level, was the conference finals, was the finals, I think that's worth one game. I think that's worth one game. And in a 7-game series, one game means can often everything. Be the difference.
Yeah. Look, I can't believe I'm saying sign me up for Minneapolis and Oklahoma City, but I would be okay with that. Like,
oh, Minneapolis in the springtime. Yeah.
Oh, no. It's not the Minneapolis I'm talking about. It's the Oklahoma that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I got no problem. Well,
that's a given. It's just, I mean, I'm sure you've already booked for your hotel rooms in June for Oklahoma City.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately. Yeah. It ain't that many hotels to go to, Jay.
Exactly. That's why you got to book now in the first round. But just go ahead and book for Oklahoma City.
About to have me cussing on here, man. Come on, man. Damn.
Hey, I've been there. We had like three straight Lakers OKC, I think. So, I've done my time.
There. We're gearing up, and I'm Mr. Western Conference, even though people think I'm a Lakers beat writer right now. We're gonna talk about that in the break because y'all ain't gonna hear what I got to say about that. When we come back for the last word, we're gonna talk about an all-time great who suffered a terrible fall yesterday on the last word. Time for the last word here with J.A. Adonde, J.A. in game 4 of the Bucks-Pacers series last night. It's like you knew it as soon as you saw it. Damian Lillard, when Dame went down, and even didn't go down, like when he punched the ball ahead, I was like, why did he punch the ball ahead instead of grabbing? And he went down, I was like, oh no, that's exactly what I think it is. And he sat down, and he hit this like smile, and he smiled towards the Pacers bench, and the Bucks took the foul, and he got up, and he could barely move, and I was like, that's an Achilles. Yeah. Like, we've seen it before. Left.
Yeah.
He went down
with no one around him. And I mean, we had some scary moments. You know, we had Brunson go down this weekend, but at least that was some contact. We had LeBron roll up on Anthony Edwards, and it looked like Anthony Edwards could be out. You know, but when you saw Dame go down, you couldn't see it really in live action. When you see the replay and you see he's just all by his lonesome going for the ball and just, you know, and they always say when it's the Achilles, you know, people have had it says it feels like you get like shot by a sniper in your leg or something. Like it just comes like you can't even, you know, it comes out of nowhere and then boom, it just pops. And, you know, he went down like that, like he'd been shot in the calf and he's reaching for it and you just knew. And Vinny, one of my initial thoughts is this could be the costliest injury we've seen, literally, because it's going to be $54 million, I think it is Dame's number next year, sitting there on the Bucks payroll, just useless, right? Eating up like a third of the salary cap.
No, not next year. Next year, the year after will be 58. Next year is 54.
No, it's 54, right?
Yeah, 54.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm saying 54 next year.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, yeah.
58 after that.
Right.
But 54 next year is still significant to get, you know, we're predicting zero out of him. And so, you know, the luxury tax implications. And, you know, the other question in terms of costly is, does Giannis say, I'm out? You know, I don't want to be here while Dame's rehabbing and I'm using and wasting another year of my prime.
Right.
And, you know, then he's sitting there the next year at $58 million and we don't know what version we're going to get. And, you know, I want to go somewhere where I can win while I still got some juice in my legs. And so, yeah, that you add those two things up, both the literal payroll expense and the potential ramifications that you could lose the greatest or the second greatest history player in the history of your franchise, depending on how you want to compare him to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, costly.
Yeah.
Costly.
I think, Damian Lillard is one of the best postseason players that we've seen. He's authored some of the most incredible moments of recent NBA history. Never got into an NBA Finals. a lot of people, like when you talked about James Harden being one of those guys who have gotten close and, you know, wanted to get over the hump, a lot of people wanted to see Damian Lillard get over the hump and sort of be rewarded for loyalty as long as he could have had loyalty with the Portland Trail Blazers. Then he gets traded. Last year, I don't know if people remember this, last year he missed games against the Pacers in the first round series because of an Achilles. And then this Achilles gets him. Remember, Damian Lillard, 34 years old.
Turns 35 in July.
Turns 35 in July. Kobe Bryant was 34 when he, well, effectively, the end of the great Kobe Bryant, the end of the top five MVP player that Kobe Bryant was, happened when he hurt his Achilles. Dominique Wilkins had his Achilles at 32 in Atlanta and had a couple of more years. He wound up getting traded the next year, traded 2 years later, for Danny Manning, which actually didn't work out well for either team. But he had a couple more years of being Dominique Wilkins before his career started winding and taking different paths. Achilles was the end of Isaiah Thomas's career. That was the last game he ever played.
Kevin Durant's the best case scenario.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Kevin Durant's the best case scenario. But, you know, a big
seven
man.
Feet.
Yeah. You know, so but even then, so we got Durant being closer to Kevin Durant. The thing with Dame, again, some great playoff performances. I differentiate him from Harden, though. Like, it didn't feel like Dame was supposed to win a championship, in part because he's never won an MVP. So, you know, there's some players that you can't call it a disappointment if they don't win. Like, I feel like it'll be a disappointment if James Harden, again, for as great as he was for as many years, never even starts an NBA Finals game, right? Like, he played in the NBA Finals, but as a sixth man with the Thunder. So far, you might argue James Harden is the greatest player who's never so much as started in an NBA's Finals game, let alone won a championship.
Okay, put it like this. Let me ask you this. Who you think, I won't say more deserving is the right word, but you'll feel me where I'm going on this. When you look at Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook, which one will you feel like is more missing a championship on his resume, given who he is? Because I think it's Damian Lillard.
Yeah, I mean, Russ was an MVP.
But he didn't—look, I keep telling everybody, and I get it. Happy for Russell Westbrook for winning the MVP. I'm happy for him.
I voted for him that year.
Happy. So you were wrong, we won't Jay. You were absolutely. You would not do that again. I bet you if you had the vote again, you wouldn't do it.
I don't regret it.
I'm not saying you regret it, but I'm saying if put in front of you again.
Everything from that year again, I think I still do it.
You're insane.
Since you're going this way, here was my thing. And it is somewhat of a narrative-based award, but the narrative on there was, oh, Kevin Durant's gone, you know, the Thunder, that's the end of the Thunder as we know them. And Russ established from the get-go, from that October, he comes out the gate, triple-double, 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 and the Thunder is still here. And Harden had like a great December, I think. But Russ, when you looked at the totality of the season, Russ established that the Thunder were still here. And he was going to make
here?
Sure
they won like
that
46 games.
They were in the playoffs. Who had them in the playoffs going into that year? And that's one of the reasons why normally my standard for an MVP is who does the most to put his team in position to win a championship. Now, I did not think that Russ put his team in position to win a championship, but the fact that they had an opportunity to win a championship by making the playoffs when no one had them in the playoffs is why I voted for him on the lowest win total of an MVP since Moses Malone in 1981.
My standard.
Because that was the last time a team with that few wins had an MVP.
And my standard.
And because of Moses.
And my standard for MVP is simple. Win me 50 games. Show me how of value that you are. Win me 50 games. If you didn't win 50 games, can't give you my vote unless something extreme happens. And nothing to me extreme happened. Russ had a great year, but because he averaged 31-10-10 as opposed to 31-9-9, I didn't think that passed the test for me. J.A.
So you know what I love about the MVP is that people can have different criteria. Like, what is
agree,
value?
Agree.
I like the fact that it's people have different opinions and different definitions of valuable and most valuable. What is the most valuable?
I'll say this. And people go, know where I'm going when I say this. The one time I would have said, okay, I'll give him my MVP vote, and his team barely won 50 games. I think they won exactly 50 games. You know what year that was, J.A.? 1988, Michael Jordan, because he won Defensive Player of the Year, too. So that meant you were the best offensive player and the best defensive player. Yeah, I'll make exceptions for the exceptional. So, of course, J.A., we kind of have to hit on what this means for the Bucks long term. They're down 3-1 to the Pacers. It looks like they're going to lose game 5.
And at this point, hope they do. I just want this series to be put out of its misery.
Yeah, and beyond the human element of everything that's happened to Damon, we're not giving that any level of short thrift. But when Giannis walked off the floor with maybe like 4 minutes left and his team was down 20, the thought came to me, what if this is the last home game at Fiserv Forum for Giannis Antetokounmpo? I don't think he's going to be talking about, you know, losing his steps to success after they, you know, lose this series. Like, J.A., they've won a grand total of one playoff series since winning the 2021 NBA championship. And now you have to wonder about Giannis, who's crossing 30, what this future looks like for him.
So it's so complicated. And there's that ironic twist that the general manager, John Horst, just got a contract extension that was announced between games or during the week. And man, this transaction acquiring Damian Lillard has been a massive bust. And, you know, even before this injury, you know, this would only his sixth game that he appeared. He missed a couple games last year in the playoffs. He had missed the first game this year while recovering from the blood clots in his leg. And, you know, but it just hasn't worked. Then it's interesting. I was at that game 3 and I was talking with someone from the Bucks, and they were talking about how their problems with the Pacers were, you know, deterring and defending them at the point of attack and you know, the lead guard penetration that was happening. I was like, well, you had a guy for that, right? Like Drew Holiday, and you traded him. And so it's really come back to haunt them. And, you know, and again, now you could potentially be looking at upwards of $50 million just sitting there eating up their salary cap. The Giannis component, I honestly don't think it makes sense for the league. You know, you could put forth all the arguments, but it's so complicated now to execute a trade. All right, look what happened. Ask how executing a trade worked out for Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe you can say it worked out pretty well for Jimmy Butler, right? But also look what he had to go through, you know, like at somewhat of a reputational hit, right? Like that was not a good look for him,
right?
The way he worked himself, you know, forced the Heat to trade him. Does Giannis want to do that? You know, he's built up this reputation as being a good guy.
I don't think he would.
But short of that, why, and maybe more importantly, how could the Bucks trade him? Because you start dealing with the second apron and all this stuff, and how you can't aggregate salaries and, you know, all these other things that make it so prohibitively difficult to execute a trade of this nature. You know, how many teams have what Milwaukee would look for? And the other thing is, why would you do, like, it's funny. I saw some things that were like, well, you could get some of these players from the Rockets, or maybe get some of these players from the Magic. Well, why do you want to rebuild with the foundation of a team that's going to lose in the first round, just like you're going to lose in the first round? You know,
well,
like I don't see how that represents progress. Well, don't you think Bucks fans would rather lose in the first round but have Giannis on their team?
I theoretically, yes, but I also think you don't want to have the questions every single year of, is Giannis going to leave? Or since he doesn't extend, he's going to opt out. And since he's opting out, he's going to walk away. Like, those things will constantly be there. That conversation was there until they traded for Damian Lillard. Like, and to remember the circumstances around that, Dame wanted to go to Miami. So if you remember, the Miami Heat put out the Bucks in the first round of that playoff series in that 1-8. And then, theoretically, and then they go out and acquire Damian Lillard. That puts you further and further away from your personal boogeyman already, and it puts you in relationship strife with your superstar. So in a way, it was a trade you had to make, even if it was disastrous. Even if it put the Boston Celtics and vaulted them to the top of the Eastern Conference food chain, you kind of felt like they had to do it because it would have put another team in place. You had no idea that Chris Middleton's ankles were going to turn to mush. You had no idea that Giannis's body was going to start breaking down the way that it did. Sometimes you have to go in knowingly. You know what? This could very well be a mistake, but it's a mistake that we're going to make eyes wide open because we have to try.
Well, you mentioned the fact that they made moves because Giannis kind of put it out there, right? That, hey, yeah, you know, we got to surround me. And that's twice now because they acquired Jrue Holiday. That worked.
Yeah, it did.
They acquired Damian Lillard. That has not worked. But you can't say that they haven't done everything they could to put Giannis in position to win a championship. So I think you have to say, look, when we had the opportunities, we made the moves, we tried. We did what we could. One time it worked, one time it didn't work. We've tried. You can't say that we didn't do anything. Now we can't do anything, right? We played a big hand last time. It didn't work out, but it's not for lack of trying. So do you want to go somewhere, move your family, start anew, you know, go away from the only home you've known in the United States? And again, it could turn out like Kevin Durant in Phoenix.
It could. You know, it could.
Do you, I mean, to me, there could be worse things than being Dirk Nowitzki, whole career in one place, only one championship.
Yeah, but I think some people look at Giannis as being a historical player, only winning one championship at some level of underachievement. I think this summer, J.A., you can see names like Zion Williamson, although I'm not sure if Zion's going to get moved for sure. Zion, Kevin Durant, Ja Morant, Giannis, possibly all being on the move this summer because this is the way that the NBA is moving now. Even Devin Booker, if you wind up getting a haul of draft picks from him, even though I don't think that that would necessarily happen. So I just think this is the first of many conversations, J.A., that we're going to have between now and the start of next season is going to be because player unhappiness, player expectations, and where we all go from here. So that is great insight from my man, J.A. Adande. Appreciate you, my man.
Good to be on with you, Benny.
Thanks to J.A. Adande for joining us. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back Thursday in the aftermath of Game 5 of the Lakers-Timberwolves series from Los Angeles for the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.